is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? This is hour two of the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're coming to you from coast to coast. I'm live at downtown Las Vegas, the Circa Resort and Casino. Michael out there in Ocean City at his office, and it's already been a great hour one. If you missed any of it, remember you can download the show in podcast form. Plenty still to come in hour two. It is the franchise tag deadline day. Lots of news that has come in the last half hour ahead of that 4 p.m. Eastern deadline. We're also going to be ranking our worst NFL trades in history, you know, after all of the news that has come out with the Russell Wilson deal.
We might have added one, Stormy. We might have added one today.
Rumor has it. And then also completing Gridiron
all right, Adele.
Goldilocks with the division odds coming out in the NFL. Plus a little college hoops with Chris Felica coming up in 15 minutes. But where we will start is the trade deadline, because we just got news moments ago. The Jags have tagged Josh Allen. Justin Madubuike gets tagged for the Baltimore Ravens. Antoine Winfield Jr., as expected, gets tagged by the Bucks. And Brian Burns earlier this morning gets tagged by the Carolina Panthers.
Well, I think, you know, this is what happens. You get close to doing a deal. You try to make the deal. You can't get it. Then you just say, okay, I'm going to tag. The other instances, what happens is you hear your players are out there that you could lose a player without getting compensation back. Bryce Huff, a lot of teams like him, good rusher. The Jets are not in a position maybe to sign him, but they could trade him, a little bit like the Ladarius Sneed situation in Kansas City. So, you know, that's going to go down to the final hour. If you do that, especially when you know another team is close to an agreement on a player, you got a choice to make. Do I tag the guy? I've got the cap room. I tag him. Okay, let's work out a trade. You know, if the team is building their offseason around him, then you may be able to squeeze a pick out of something you were not going to be able to get. Now, remember, if you lose a player in this market, eventually, if he gets a huge number, you're going to get a compensatory three anyway following year. So the deal's got to be right for you, but you also got to be prepared that if you can't trade the guy, you got to keep him.
Of this group, is Brian Burns the most tag and tradable?
Well, I think Sneed is. I really okay. do. I think Sneed's the most tag and tradable because everybody's looking for corners. Now, you know, Burns is obviously everybody's looking for pass rushers too. But I think, you know, when you're looking for a corner who could come in and start and play man-to-man, I think that's going to be a high demand. Whether they can get a fifth-round pick, fourth-round pick, I don't know. But once again, you know one thing about the Chiefs. They're probably not going to spend a lot of money in free agency because they're going to re-sign Chris Jones. So for them to let him go, it's got to bring something back almost close to that compensatory, because once you trade him, you don't get that compensatory pick back.
Need and T. Higgins, too, that were tagged earlier this week. Still a couple question marks, including the Colts and Michael Pittman, but you reported earlier today you think that one's going to be another that goes all the way down to the wire of that deadline later.
Well, I think the cap going up has kind of messed up a little bit of everything that's going on, right? I think that everybody felt like, okay, you know, we can get a deal done. Here's where we are. And everybody kind of had parameters of a deal. However, now with the cap going up, what is going to be the percentage of increase? You know, and we saw Mike Evans take a $26 million a year deal, if that's the actual real number. We haven't seen the contract come across yet. So I think that's the other thing we have to do a good job of, Stormy, is not buying the numbers that get reported in the open market, because they're never accurate. Right. They're never accurate. We're going to read, you know, Kirk Cousins signs with Team X and he got $72 million per year. And then you look at the contract and it's not. So I think you have to be really careful. And I think that's what teams probably are doing today, going through that to make sure that they know where they are. I think at some point it's going to be probably a decent deal for the Colts to just tag Pittman because, you know, you're renting him. Remember, when you tag a player, you're renting him. You know, you're not committed to the 3 years. If the agent wants to go off 120% off the franchise, it's easy to say, no, we're not doing that. So it's now you got a chance to get to the table and see, but the worst comes to worst, you're going to rent them and you're not going to carry any cap debt with you.
I've yet to see anything on Bears corner Jalen Johnson. We do know a handful of players who will not be tagged. Defensive tackle Christian Wilkins for the Miami Dolphins among that group, as well as all those running backs, Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, obviously far too pricey to do that. He's going to hit the free agent market. And you were talking earlier as well about the Jets potentially tagging Bryce Huff because he's gained some interest here as well lately.
He's a hot commodity in the marketplace. You know, I think the teams that especially like to have those edge guys, I mean, he's done a really good job for the Jets. He was a guy who got constant pressure. Now you say, why wouldn't the Jets sign him? You know, I think to me, the Jets have to try to decide where they want to put their money and what they do, but he's one of their better defensive front guys. Now, he doesn't play all the time. He's a situational rusher. It's going to be interesting if the team that signs him and pays him $17 or $18 million, can they leave him on the edge where people can run the football at him a little bit and wear him down? You know, when you're paying $18 million, that's not a situational rusher. What you're paying for is somebody who can get pressure all the time, like Bosa. You don't have to take Bosa out of the game, right? Bosa can stay in the game on all four downs. So, but I think when you go to Huff, you know, yeah, he had 10 sacks, had a ton of pressures, 21 quarterback hits. You want him on the field if you're paying him $17 million. It'd be interesting to see how this all works.
Yeah, and so, Michael, also, as I say, I haven't seen anything on Jalen Johnson yet. I see from Ian Rappaport that the Bears are placing the franchise tag on him and quoting GM Ryan Poles, who said at the Combine that they are in the process of getting a deal done and that those conversations are going well and ongoing. So there's the update from that standpoint. Also, in the last 10 minutes or so, some news coming out of Seattle. The Seahawks are releasing three-time Pro Bowl safeties Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs. So with a new regime coming in comes change, Michael. What do you make of that news?
Well, I mean, the Jamal Adams, I didn't like this trade when it happened because Jamal Adams plays a position that doesn't exist anymore in the National Football League. John Lynch got into the Hall of Fame playing this position. But if John Lynch were playing today, he'd have to play linebacker. This position doesn't exist. A strong safety in the box who can't cover man-to-man. That was Jamal Adams. He had incredible fanfare coming out in the draft. Oh, my God, he's big, he's fast. He can't cover anybody. Mm-hmm. And he had success when he was rushing the passer. But what happened is once people decided that, you know what, we're not going to count Jamal Adams as a linebacker or a safety. We're going to count him as a down guy. Okay, every protection that an NFL team runs in pass protection is predicated on who's down, the down lineman. If they call five down, they'll point Adams out as a down lineman. That means an offensive lineman is going to block him. Well, that takes Adams completely out of the game because he's not going to be able to rush against a big guy. Where he was making success was coming free or rushing against a little running back. And once people stopped that, his production went right in the tank. He can't cover, so they had to blitz him all the time. It really ended up being a poor trade for Seattle. They gave up two number one picks for this guy, and it never made sense to me. I know it was, I'm sure Pete Carroll saw Jamal Adams as a Joey Browner type safety, right? Big in the box. I'm going to Steve Atwater, Joey Porter, I mean Joey Browner. But he didn't have any coverage skills at all. He's got to play linebacker, and he's got the kind of idea that he's this elite player. Good luck to his next team trying to tell him he's not going to make a lot of money. Good luck with that one.
Yes, sir. With the move, Seattle saves $27.5 million in cash and significant cap space as they look ahead to what's next in the Mike McDonald era. We also like to do this each and every day a little bit in the offseason, just finding out, Michael, what you come into the day with on the top of your mind. So what's on Michael's mind here down the stretch?
Well, I think what's on my mind is Russell Wilson. Like, where does he go? You know, we've been listening to the media complain about Russell's not been able to cook. We've been listening to the media complain about it's always the offensive coordinator's fault. It's not Russell's fault. It's, you know, he needs better skill players around him. He needs this. He needs that. You know, he's at a crossroads in his career. And I think to me, where he goes and what he decides to do, you know, I think the lesson that I've learned about Russell, and you learn things later in your life, is the connectivity between the quarterback and the team. And Russell in Seattle, really, after that season in 13 and 14, that connectivity seemed to wane away. And it never looked like he was connected in Denver. With Hackett there, he had his own program. We know that didn't work. Last year, they tried to make him connected. Didn't really work either. I think connectivity between the team and the quarterback is something we don't talk enough about. And when you have this profile that Russell had in terms of being a megastar, married a star, all those things, it's hard to connect to the average guy on the team. And I think that's going to be an interesting where he goes, because if he gets told he's the starter and he comes in as let Russ cook, it's not going to work out either. He's got to come in with some humbleness, right? I mean, Kurt Warner got into the Hall of Fame. And when you really break down his career, you know, the middle section of his career for 6 years wasn't good. Now, the last 2 years at Arizona were good. I mean, it's still kind of remarkable he got in the Hall of Fame. He had 5 good years, but he got in the Hall of Fame. Everybody just thinks Russell's a slam dunk for the Hall of Fame, but when you break down his numbers, he's going to have to play better in the last couple seasons, I think. I don't think it's a slam dunk. I really don't. But for me, I think the next team, what's on my mind is who's advising Russell. Who's going to tell him what to do, where to go? Because if he's got anything left in him, and look, he managed the game well last year, didn't turn it over in terms of interceptions. But if he can get himself to a place where he can look better and blend with the team, I think it's going to do him a lot of good.
Yeah, from a leadership and personality standpoint, he's definitely been polarizing. He's going into his age 36 season, but it's interesting talking about a guy who 5 years ago, a lot of, like, everybody was talking about how he was on a Hall of Fame track. Denver has certainly been a different story. So can he have, like you mentioned, a Kurt Warner type of resurgence depending on where he goes? Or is this kind of the end of the line for what we have seen in Russell Wilson? Because obviously, even though he ticked up this past year, the worst statistical season of his career when he started out in Denver, and a lot of off of the field drama. When we come back, turn in the page to College Hoops. Chris the Bear Felica of Fox Sports joining us next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Baseball is back, and what better way to hit off the Grapefruit and Cactus Leagues than with VSiN's free MLB Betting Primer. This primer will tell you how to bet on spring training and continue all season long with our VSiN Experts World Series Futures Analysis. Our free MLB Betting Primer has basic baseball betting advice for those new to betting the sport, plus a breakdown on how to use sabermetrics for our more data-driven bettors. Make this your best season yet. Download the MLB Betting Primer for free right now at vsin.com/guide. That's vsin.com/guide. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. The calendar has flipped to March over the last week. We've got conference tournaments and the big dance upon us. So to help us break it all down, we bring in Chris the Bear Felica of Fox Sports. Check out the Bear Bets podcast wherever you download your podcast. Our good friend of the show, Will Hill, part of that great gambling group chat. And we were joking in the commercial break, it's KenPom season for Michael Bear. So yeah. He's all football all the time, but he's turning the page for you today, my guy.
I appreciate that. I like the fact that he's open and amenable here, and it is time for March. So it was funny. We were joking in the break too. It really is a really, you know, how whether you use the ratings or don't use the ratings, the best thing is for me is just it's a good organizational spot where everything's in one spot. So that's why I love it.
Yeah. You know, Chris, I mean, I make fun of it, but I enjoy it because when, you know, I love the tournament. I love basketball. So when I watch it, I kind of go to it and say, okay, who's this player? Where are they ranked? How does it look? I don't use it for picking my, you know, teams because I go by more of who I like and who I don't like and teams like that. But for me, you know, I think you're right. I think it gives you the conference organization. It gives you the team organization. So let's start at the big picture. Like, is there a team with a little bit of a longer odds that you think, you know, they might get to the Final Four?
It's interesting. Someone brought this up to me yesterday, asked me that same question. And I mentioned Gonzaga. And Gonzaga is a team that in the past I really haven't been all the way in on where they've been expected to get to the Final Four or they've been a top seed. But people are treating Gonzaga right now like they're 10-6 out there on the West Coast Conference. When you look at what they've done this year, they've gone to Kentucky and won. They've got two conference losses by a combined 3 points. This is still a good team, and they're probably going to be more in their comfort level this year, along the lines of maybe a 10 seed or an 11 seed or somewhere along. And that makes them very dangerous, I think, to not only maybe pull an upset in the second round against maybe a 2 seed or so, but maybe to get to the Final Four. Like 19-1 is what I saw right now to get to the Final Four for Gonzaga. So while in the past I haven't necessarily been super high on the Zags, I think this year they might fulfill a little bit more of the role that got them to be the program they become.
And it is interesting you say that, because they're still a 24-6 team, and they have one loss since January 18th, and it was to St. Mary's, who they just dominated the other day. So great, great points all around. Some other teams at the top I have questions about. Houston, who, you know, top defensive team in the country, but their depth players are kind of dropping like flies recently. Three important key players no longer available for the rest of the year. And Purdue, a team that went out in the first round a season ago, and people say they don't believe in their coach, yada, 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 but could they maybe pull a Virginia where they lose in the 16-1 and then win it all the next year? How do you view those other two stalwart teams?
It's interesting, because with Houston, remember, the same thing happened last year to the Cougars. They had a bunch of injuries down the stretch, and the team that took the floor against Miami in the Sweet 16 did not resemble anything to the team that we saw throughout the year. I was kicking this around as well. Like, I wonder if you go back and look, if there is anything. Obviously, Virginia's the team that we bring up that lost as a 1 seed in the first round, and then the following year came back and won the title. Like, look at UConn. 2 years ago, they lost to New Mexico State in the first round, and then last year they had that dominant run to the NCAA title. So could Purdue be that team? Could even Arizona be that team? I mean, I've been a little bit bearish on Arizona compared to most people, but it's clear they're better defensively, and it's clear on their best day that they can beat anybody. I still have nightmares about the way they just completely unraveled down the stretch against Princeton in that tournament game last year. Maybe Tommy Lloyd has learned something from that. Maybe not, but I'll be curious to see which like 4 seed that Purdue and Houston would line up with potentially in the Sweet 16, because if they line up with a team like Auburn, who has a ton of athletic ability, they get good shots, they defend, they've got a player in Broome who's a massive problem, a coach in Bruce Pearl who's taken a team to the Final Four. Auburn's a team that I've bet Auburn at around 20-1 or so to win the title. Now, I know they only have that one quad one win, and they haven't beaten a bunch of teams away from home, and people are knocking on that, but it's like nobody plays a home game in the tournament. They're all neutral site games, and Auburn is a team. If I'm Purdue or Houston or UConn or any of those 1 seeds, I don't want to see them on that 4 line on next Sunday.
Well, I want to ask you, our producer Elliot's from Indianapolis. He's a huge Purdue fan, even though he went to Missouri. Are you in the Matt Painter camp that he can get this turned around and get to a Final Four, or are you the most everybody, Matt ain't never going to do it?
It's funny, because you think back, Jim Calhoun was never going to win the big game until he ultimately did. Remember, UConn had a ton of losses in the 90s, and then finally they broke through and won that title. Tony Bennett in Virginia, they were never going to win until they did. Jay Wright, when he went out and retired, he was probably considered the best coach in the game. And Villanova was, again, the team that they were never going to win until they did. So I think ultimately he will. And they're probably in a good position this year to get far, because they will be the 1 seed. I think they'll obviously play better. And the addition of Jones in the backcourt not only gives them a defender, but it gives them another shooter as well. So this Purdue team, I think, is much more equipped to make it deeper. Remember, too, with Matt Painter, they've been to the 8 under him. I mean, granted, they were a lower seed. They weren't necessarily a 1 seed, but he's gotten this team far in the tournament before, so it would not be a surprise. I know we like to make fun of Purdue and Virginia for being the 1 seeds to lose, but it would not be a surprise if Purdue wound up winning it at all.
Chris the Bear, Felica, Fox Sports, joining us live on the Lombardi Line. Let's get to some of your plays coming up tonight, because you know I love a little Mountain West basketball action. Boise State hosting the Nevada Wolfpack. They beat this team by 8 on the road earlier this season, laying 5.5 today. What do you like?
This is a Boise team that people who nationally may not be following the Mountain West as closely as you do, Stormy, they have been absolutely annihilating people. I think they've got like 6 straight wins by double digits. We still don't know the status of Blackshear for Nevada. If he can't play, and now they're going on the road to Boise, I think this game could get away from the Wolfpack. So I like Boise minus the 5.5, and I like Georgetown getting 8.5 at home tonight against Providence. It's funny, Dr. Bob, who's on with Gil a lot, has the saying like, if you're in a must-win situation, it must mean that you're not very good. Well, Providence is in that must-win situation now, going on the road against their former head coach, against the Georgetown team that played Xavier tough over the weekend. They played Seton Hall tough in recent weeks. Like they only have a couple of Big East wins, but they're still competing. They're much better coached than they were last year. So Georgetown getting 8.5 tonight against Providence, a team that I think is going to be backed by the public because they're on the bubble. People think they have to win, they need to win, and they're going to win. I don't think it'll be easy for the Friars tonight.
How about Arkansas Little Rock? You like them to win their conference. Tell us why.
I do, and I think one of the bigger things you need to do when you look at these conference tournaments is examine the bracket, because all these tournament brackets are not the same. In the Ohio Valley Conference, the top two seeds are automatically in the semifinal, and the team that people think is the best conference team in the conference, Morehead State, they're actually the 3 seed. So they're going to have to beat UT Martin just to get to the final, whereas Little Rock is the second choice, or I think plus 250 or so is the number that I saw on them. They got a kid who's been at Texas A&M and Arkansas by the name of K.K. Robinson, who's a really good player. Little Rock is a really good team that's coming together. And the fact they only have to win the one game that they should win to get to the title game and then take on whoever survives that Tennessee-Martin Morehead State game, I think UALR at plus 250 is a good bet.
We've only got about a minute left here, Bear, but do you have any other conference tournaments you're looking at, or were you just too busy salivating over the fact we have Heisman Trophy odds out for next year?
I do like Heisman Trophy odds for next year, and I actually I can't wait to get out there next week to make a couple of plays. Karen Drones at Virginia Tech at 250-1, I think he was out there, 250-1 at Circa. I think he's someone that you look at how he just ran right through Tulane in the rain in that bowl game, and the Hokie schedule kind of sets up really nicely for them. Look, you're betting someone 250-1. You don't expect to win that bet, but things kind of look, you look at the Hokie schedule, like they could be undefeated going to Miami. And then Jalen Daniels from Kansas, a guy who he played only 3 games last year, but when he's been healthy, he's been super dynamic. And again, there aren't any giant killers in the Big 12. There's no one that Lance Leipold's team is scared of. So Jalen Daniels at around 60-1 with another player I looked at as well. So to answer your question, I've been examining those highs and highs a little bit more than some of the other competitors.
Tell me how I knew you would be locked and loaded. You're awesome. Thank you so much for the time. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Bear.
Chris, the Bear Felica. Check out the Bear Bets podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're stepping aside. Back with the 5 worst trades in NFL history next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Put the VSiN experts to work for you and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. If you sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today, you'll get your first year for only $199 instead of the usual $240 price. But all you have to do is use our promo code Lombardi. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year. That includes our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus our upcoming March Madness betting guide with best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Remember to use that promo code Lombardi. Gets you your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you do it. Thank you to Chris the Bear Felica for joining us. That was fun talking a little bit of college hoops. Speaking of that March Madness being upon us. But Michael, some of the big news over the last 24 hours, of course, every show is headlining it with Russell Wilson has officially been informed that he is going to be released by the Denver Broncos. The $85 million dead cap hit heard around the world, which naturally has led us to a conversation about the worst trades in NFL history. Your homework last night was to rank the top 5, and we might as well start at the top. Because there's not a whole lot of intrigue or surprise to it based on the news.
Well, I mean, here's the issue, right? So in the past, when we had bad deals and we were not in a salary cap, there was no trailing money going behind them. And so you weren't double dipping. You weren't double affected, as should I say. And this trade for Denver, it's always going to be the number one trade, because the worst trade in the history of the league because of the contract. If it would have just been the players, okay, bad trade, we move on. But the lingering cost to the cap over the next two seasons is really what makes it so bad. I mean, the fact that Russell didn't play well, that's something that sometimes it doesn't work out in a trade. But the contract and the cap hit that the Broncos are going to take for the next 2 years is going to be hard to me to imagine that anybody will have this bad of a trade ever coming again. It really is. Now, look, we know that Seattle traded Jamal Adams for Jamal Adams. They gave up two number ones. But when they let Jamal Adams go and then they redid his contract, there's some lingering to that. This era of football, this is why trading is so hard, because if you trade for a player and then you redo his deal and he's not what you think he is, you've got problems.
I mean, the trade's just so bad for so many reasons. You think about all the assets they gave up, and then they signed him to the 5-year extension, and which he never played a second on because he was still playing out in Denver the last 2 years that were on his initial contract with the Seattle Seahawks. And then you add into the mix that this was a Broncos team, Michael, that with the defense that they had, genuinely thought they were a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender, and they go 11-19 in the two seasons with Russ and have a coaching change. It's remarkable the way that this has panned out. But, okay, so we wanted to get number one out of the way first since it was the obvious news. But now let's count backwards down at number five, which you actually have a tie for number five in your worst trades in NFL history. What you got?
Well, I think when you look at it, now we're in another era. So we're in this era. Mitchell Trubisky trade up with the Bears, and Trey Lance, three number ones to trade up there. I mean, the only good thing is the rookie wage scale that didn't just destroy both these teams. But these two trades, I mean, the 49ers were willing to overcome it because they got Brock Purdy. The Bears are still searching. They haven't overcome it. And then they double dipped and went down with Justin Fields. So the last 2 years, and this is Ryan Pace's parting gift to the Bears. He drafted Trubisky. He drafted Fields. We know there's no real market out there for Fields. These trades are just, and he traded up in a draft where it had Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. He trades up for a guy that played 1 year of college football. Remarkable. Remarkable. But he's in the Atlanta front office now, which is doesn't need anybody there. They're perfectly situated. They don't need Belichick. They're perfectly situated. So my point here is now these mistakes of the quarterback, it's not the contract. It's the assets that you gave for the unknown.
The 49ers certainly in that situation bailed out in a major way, getting Brock Purdy as Mr. Relevant, the last picked in that draft. What's your number four on the worst trades in NFL history?
Well, the 49ers, I hate to keep going down this road, but this was a different era of the 49ers, the Joe Thomas era. When he takes over, when Eddie DeBartolo buys the 49ers, he hires Joe Thomas. This is a guy who supposedly knew everything about football. He trades for O.J. and gives up an enormous amount to get O.J. Simpson on the team. And the juice was out of juice at this point. I mean, he was out of juice here. So, you know, they traded a first-round pick, two number twos, a third and a fourth. And it was over with. Plus, the 49ers before this, you know, they had drafted, they traded for Jim Plunkett with the New England Patriots, and they gave up a bunch of picks for him. And it was over for him until he went to the Raiders and reestablished his career. So the 49ers in the Joe Thomas era, when Bill Walsh walked into the building in 1979, he had no draft picks. He'd been depleted because of the Simpson and then add on the Jim Plunkett trade. But the Simpson trade, again, now, we're 78. I know I'm dating myself here. I was only 9, though. I mean, okay. No, I was older than that. Now, was I? Yeah, I was older than that. Anyway, I was, you know, my point here is even then trading for running backs was a problem. And so this didn't work out.
Yeah, a theme that has been longstanding, that's for sure. But, okay.
I was 19. I'm sorry. I was 19.
Even though that the 49ers were involved in that one before my time, so I'm not offended, there were a couple of bad trades, though, that went down in the 70s, which leads us to number three.
This was one. So, you know, one of the things I wrote about in Football Done Right was that there's always conditions to trades, right? And what we saw with the San Francisco trade with OJ, that was, oh, we got to get this player to help us sell tickets. That never works, right? The one that never works either is this one where we're one player away. So John Hadle's playing quarterback for the San Diego Chargers, back with Sid Gilman. He gets traded to the Los Angeles Rams for Coy Bacon and Bob Thomas, and just two players. And he goes on and has a really good year for the Rams that year. And the next season, he's struggling. And Green Bay beats him in a game badly. And by the trade deadline, they trade a first, second, and third round pick to the Green Bay Packers for a guy that the Rams had just traded two players away that none of them played for the Chargers. And they take Hadle. And then Dan Devine the next year goes off to Notre Dame, leaves the team behind, and John Hadle never plays. This was called, for people that are too young to remember, this was called back in the day of pro football, the Lawrence Welk trade. Why? Because Lawrence Welk was a band leader that had a TV show, boring as hell, but he had a TV show. My grandmother used to watch it. I don't know why, but it could put you to sleep. But he always would start the show with one, two, a one and a two and a three. That's how this became the Lawrence Welk trade, and it didn't work out.
I love that. That's smooth. And then number two on your top five worst trades in NFL history is called the trade for a reason, and I think everybody outside knows it's Herschel Walker to the Minnesota Vikings.
One player away trade, right? Yep. And so Mike Lynn's probably smiling today somewhere. I think Mike Lynn, he may have passed away. He might be I think he did pass away, but he's smiling somewhere, knowing that he no longer holds the reign of the worst trade in the history of football, right? Because this was bad. I mean, this started out where the Vikings really were thought they were one player away. I was in Cleveland at this time. We thought we were one player away. We were involved in this trade, but quickly we got eliminated because Minnesota put all their chips in the middle of the table. And thankfully they did, or else we would have been stuck with Herschel. And they traded this, and it was so convoluted. Three first-round picks, three seconds, and then there was five players that if they didn't re-sign the players, they got more draft picks off of it. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was remarkable. Now, the good thing was, again, 1989, no cap. So, you know, they had to give Herschel a car, and they had to give him a place to live, which they did, but it didn't come across their cap. This is kind of the one that really was always going to be the worst trade in football until George Payton made this horrible trade and cost his team 2 years of cap money. I mean, George walks around that building in Denver. I mean, I would have my head down all the time. I'd be embarrassed.
A deal that ultimately involved 18 players and draft picks, Minnesota thinking that they're going to get a Super Bowl out of this, and then instead you just basically help rebuild the Cowboys and they create their dynasty and win a few Lombardis in the 90s. So crazy. I wanted to throw in a couple honorable mentions at you. Antonio Go. Brown to the Raiders in recent history, considering they gave up a third and a fifth for him to never play because he nearly froze off his foot with cryotherapy and just couldn't seem to get on board with proper helmets. So they cut him before he ever played down.
And they paid him too. Remember, Stormy? Yeah. They paid him too. They paid him a new deal.
Sticking with the theme of the Packers, with your John Hadle one at number three, Brett Favre from the Falcons to the Packers for a first round pick. He ends up bringing the franchise their first Super Bowl since the 60s, three MVPs, 16 seasons. And the Falcons got a guy named Tony Smith who did a whole lot of nada, so glad they traded that schlub in Brett Favre. And then our guy Elliot wanted to make sure he brought up the 2013 Colts trade of first to the Browns for Trent Richardson, a deal you orchestrated, Michael. On the good end, you got the good end.
Yeah, that was
on
a good one
trade.
Because, yeah, we got the good end because, when the strength coach came to me and said, Trent Richardson's in the best shape of his life, he's dynamic, and then I went out in practice and I watched how slow he looked, I said, we better trade him now because it's not going to last.
And then the Browns, after you moved on, messed it up because they used that first for Johnny Football. So, well done.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5 and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Wrapping things up here on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line, it's franchise tag deadline day. We are nearing closer and closer to that 4 p.m. Eastern deadline. And over the last hour, a couple other news items regarding the tag that we didn't get a chance to get to just yet. Patriots safety Kyle Duggar has been placed on the transitional tag, Michael. And we talked earlier about exclusive and non-exclusive. All right, let's get the lowdown on the transitional and what that means for him.
Well, that just means it's really a first right of refusal. There's no compensation. If a team wants to sign him to a contract, they can go sign him. The Patriots have the right to match that deal, or they could just let him walk without any compensation. So it's the lowest number on the thing. I'm sure that what the Patriots heard was there was a lot of conversations about a deal out there, and so they wanted to protect their rights to a deal. Now, if you match it, you can then trade the player. Look, we're going to match this, but we'll trade him to you for something else. It gives you a little bit of leverage in the negotiation. But remember, all these deals are tied to money. Now, if you know you're going to spend a lot of money in free agency, which the Patriots have indicated they're going to, then you're not going to get compensatory picks back because it's a gain-loss scenario, right? You sign a player from another team, you lose a player. If you pay, it's all based on how much you put into free agency and what gets taken out. And so when you look at that, that's how the compensatories are handled. So if the Patriots are going to pay whatever they get for Duggar, they probably would have never gotten in a compensatory because they're going to spend money.
Yeah, and each team can, of course, only use the tag on one player each year. So Duggar gets that tag, meaning their offensive lineman, Mike Onwenu, we'll have to hit the free agent market now. We'll see how that ultimately gets played out. Other franchise, go ahead.
And he played right tackle, Stormy, for them to improve his position. Now, he's a very talented guy. He's very inconsistent. He's going to be an interesting player to examine where he goes, because if you sign him, you think, oh, we got a good player. But then there's also times where he just doesn't play like a good player. So that's going to watch.
Absolutely. Other guys that did get tagged today, the Jaguars tagged Josh Allen, the Ravens tagged Justin Madubuike, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers tag Antoine Winfield Jr., and the Panthers throw the tag on Brian Burns. Other guys, Chiefs corner L'Jarius Sneed and Bengals wideout T. Higgins were tagged earlier in the franchise deadline timeframe. Michael Pittman, as you reported in ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, now following up as well, expecting Michael Pittman to be tagged by the Colts leading up to the deadline. We also got some news a little bit ago, not franchise tag worthy, but just in terms of general deals going on. The Texans agreed to terms on a deal to keep Dalton Schultz in Houston. 3 years, $36 million, $23.5 million guaranteed at signing. That's big for C.J. Stroud to be able to get another great target held under contract.
Yeah, I mean, Dalton Schultz played really well. He was the number two weapon for them, you know, and I think to me, you know, he's not a true, he's a receiving tight end, which really helps C.J. Stroud. So there was a lot of talk about him going other places, and I think the Texans did the smart thing in signing him to get him under contract to keep that skill group together that they've been assimilating. And they're going to spend money. Look, let's be clear here now. Even though the Texans weren't winning the last 5 years, they were spending money the last 5 years. Last year, they were the second most team in cash spent. So this owner has spent money. Now, the reward's just finally starting to come in, but they have spent money.
Yeah, great season for them. DeMeco Ryans barely beat out for Coach of the Year from Kevin Stefanski at the NFL Honors Awards. Anything else that you want to touch on, free agency or franchise tag deadline, before we get to our final Gridiron Goldilocks division of the day, Michael?
Yeah. I mean, I'm anxiously awaiting this. I think that to me, free agency is always, there's so much, as we talked about, Stormy, so much misinformation. It's going to be interesting to see, because of this extra cap room, how much more money the players are going to put in their pocket. I think teams didn't budget for this much cap room, so it's going to be interesting. The player's value doesn't go up, right? I mean, if you think a guy's $19 million a year, or you evaluate him and you evaluate him on that scale, and all of a sudden now there's more money, he didn't do anything to earn more money, but because of the cap, he's going to get more money.
Yep, a huge difference in the cap this year. So it'll be interesting. Like, we got to monitor things with the Dallas Cowboys. We talked about it earlier, the Dak Prescott of it all, but getting Micah Parsons and CeeDee Lamb, their deals done first, and a lot of teams with a lot of question marks in free agency. So it'll be a fun couple of months coming up. Let's wrap things up with Gridiron Goldilocks. We did the AFC West earlier. We'll do the NFC West now. Looking at these division odds on DraftKings and determining if the numbers are too high, too low, or just right. Last 5 minutes here of the day. Let's start with the defending division champions, the San Francisco 49ers, who made it all the way to the Super Bowl this year, an overtime heartbreaker against Kansas City. They are the same price that Kansas City is in their division, minus 190 to win the NFC West. Too high, too low, or just right?
I think that's just right. I really do. I think that's right. I mean, look, I think there's a good chance they can get Brandon Ayuk back because the cap went up. I think that if they get him back, they need him. They, you know, the one thing about the 49ers that I don't think people talk enough about is they're not an explosive team. They're a yards after the catch team. And Ayuk gives them that element of explosiveness. So I think they need him. I think this is the right number. I don't think it's I think it's perfectly set at where it is.
I agree, especially given kind of the state of the division. It was the NFC best for a long time and not so much anymore. Although the Los Angeles Rams had a very surprising season. They end up making the playoffs. You've called it Sean McVay's best coaching job ever. They're plus 350 in the division. Too high, too low, or just right?
You know, I think it's just right. And here's why. I think they'll probably, you know, this is the first time they're going to have a first round pick in a long time. They did a good job of drafting last year. Got a lot of young guys to play. Sean does a great job. But if Matthew Stafford gets hurt, it could fall apart again. They have no backup. We don't even know where Stetson Bennett went to, right? They drafted him in the fourth round last year. So,
he disappeared.
You know, they're going to need to fix that. They're going to need to fix it, right? And so I think to me, that's why this number's just right. If I thought Matthew Stafford was 32 years old, I think the number would be a lot lower. But because he's prone to injury, and he could get hurt, and that could really hurt the team because we saw last year, even though they made it to the playoffs and had an ample opportunity to beat the Lions on the road, you know, when Stafford went out of the game, it was ugly.
Fair point. Going to need that offensive line to stand up and protect him. Plus 350 again, the division odds, 15-1 in the NFC, 35-1 for the Super Bowl in 2024-25. How about the Seattle Seahawks, a new regime with Mike McDonald taking over for Pete Carroll? Year two of Geno Smith took a little bit of a step back. How about year three? There's plus 650 in the NFC West.
I think this is too low for them. I think this is too much. I mean, I would see them being closer to the Rams. I think the change, I think McDonald's a good coach. I'm counting on that. I think he'll do a much better job with their defense. Clint Hurdle was a defensive line coach that became a coordinator. They had struggled to stop the run in his whole 2 years as a coordinator there. I like Seattle's team. I don't think they're as bad as people might lend to think they are. I played a lot of young guys. Their two tackles were hurt last year offensively. If Geno can play well, which I think they've got good skill players, I would see this number being more at 450, 400, right? Not at 650, Stormy.
And again, that news we saw today, by the way, the Seahawks releasing three-time Pro Bowl safeties Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs. Last one here, the Arizona Cardinals. They sit 13-1. Kyler Murray, when he came on the back half of the season from his injury, things looked better offensively. They started winning more games. They were always chippy throughout the season, just never quite had enough come the fourth quarter in the majority of their games. Do they take a step forward? Again, 13-1, too high, too low, just right.
Well, look, the Raiders were at 12-1. The Broncos were 11-1 today. I think 13-1 is the right number. Look, you know, I know they keep saying he's their franchise quarterback, but I've yet to see him play at a franchise level. Like, I'm not sure you can win a Super Bowl with Kyler Murray. I'm not sure you can continue to get where you want to go. We shall see. They have been completely supportive behind him. I thought last year he didn't throw the ball down the field. Now, look, I understand there's a lot of guys that they were playing. They had a lot of young players. The offensive line wasn't great. DJ Humphrey's coming off an ACL, I think, is going to be a problem for them. So for me, you know, for me, I'm not sold on the quarterback of the team. And so that makes it hard for me to see them being better than 13-1. Now, they have a quarterback. How bad is this? They have a quarterback. The Raiders don't. The Raiders are 12-1. They're 13-1.
That's an excellent point. I am curious.
What does that tell you, Stormy?
The state of the organization ain't great right now with what they've got. We'll see how things play out with Jonathan Gannon. I'm particularly curious to see what they do with that number 4 overall pick, because we talked earlier, could they potentially trade out of that spot? And we see a bunch of quarterbacks go early, or Marvin Harrison Jr. has been the favorite to land in Arizona and be a weapon for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I think they're going to trade this out, because I think at the end of the day, they need more than just one player. And Harrison, you know, obviously he's a good player, but if you can get Neighbors and a bunch of other picks, you got to take a look at that.
More Gridiron Goldilocks divisions to go through tomorrow. Make sure that you come on back and join us. For now, that's a wrap on the Lombardi Line, but keep it locked right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.